could go to Isaiah chapter 1. We'll start there. Isaiah chapter 1. We'll start in verse 1. Isaiah 1:1. The vision of Isaiah, son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, kings of Judah. Hear, O heavens, give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they are so thankful to me that I have taken such good care of them. No, they've rebelled against me. Verse 3, the ox knows his owner. The ass knows where his master's crib is. Israel don't know nothing. Israel doesn't know. My people do not consider. And we're not going to read the next verse, but if you want to read it for yourself, it doesn't speak very highly of the children of Israel in doing that. You know, these dumb animals, they know where the food is. And the comparison is, you guys are dumber than them dumb animals. You know, here's God, and you just don't even think about that. With that in mind, turn to chapter 8 of Isaiah. And let's see. We'll start verse 11. It says, for the Lord spake thus to me with a strong hand and instructed me that I should not walk in the way of this people. Well, why would he do that? They're dumber than animals. You know, they don't know nothing about God. Where do you get fed? And that walk in the way of, it's an idiom, means don't conduct your manner of life like they are. I mean, it says he spoke to him with a strong hand. Do you really talk with your hand? But it's a figure of speech, meaning God was very forceful, very adamant, that sort of thing. Sort of like the expression that we have in our culture, I'm not going to tell you this twice. You know, kind of like that, where really, whoa, what's he getting ready to say? So he spoke to me with a strong hand, saying, verse 12, say ye not a confederacy to all them to whom this people shall say a confederacy, neither fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. And that's the sort of thing I wanted to look at, that last little part of that verse there. Neither fear ye their fear, and we're going to come back to that. But verse 13, sanctify the Lord of hosts himself, and let him be your fear, and let him be the one that you dread. That don't make sense, does it? Verse 12, where it says, fear ye their fear, nor be afraid. It's the same words. Verse 12, fear, is the same as verse 13, fear. The word afraid in verse 12 is the same as the word dread in verse 13 in the Hebrew. So, you know, don't be afraid of what they're afraid of. Be afraid of God instead. Does that really make any sense? Not really, right? What is it? That word fear, it can be used like to respect or have reverence for. And the word, the last word of verse 12 and the last word of verse 13, same Hebrew word, it means to stand in awe of. That's one of the definitions of that word. And that definition would fit right here in these verses. Let him be the one that you have respect for. And just stand in awe of him. And then if I was the guys splitting this stuff down into chapters and verses, I would have put that first phrase of verse 14 to be the last part of verse 13. So that verse 13 would read, sanctify the Lord of hosts himself. Let him be the one that you have respect for. Let him be the one you stand in awe of. And he shall be for a what?
A sanctuary.
And that sanctuary is like an asylum, a refuge, you know, a place where you get protection, you get care, you know, that sort of thing. He shall be for a sanctuary. Going on verse 14, but for a stone of stumbling and for a rock of offense to both the houses of Israel, for a gin and for a snare to the inhabitants of Jerusalem. And many among them shall stumble and fall and be broken and be snared and be taken. Ain't that what you want for your life? Not exactly, right? Well, why was that going to happen to them? 'cause the ox knows his owner, the ass knows his master's crib. You guys don't know nothing. Keeping so this fear thing in verse 12, you know, it's, I used to think that, you know, the reason they were in bad shape was because they were afraid. That ain't it. You know, he said, don't say a confederacy. Don't have respect for what they're respecting. Well, whatever it was that they were respecting, we got a pretty good idea of what it was that they were not respecting, right? And if you're not respecting God, then really, what difference does it make what you are replacing that with? Whatever it is, it ain't going to be right. You know, and that's why verse 15, all those bad things were going to happen to them. Now look at Hosea chapter 4. I just saw something this morning I never really noticed before. Hosea chapter 4. What's Hosea? Ezekiel, Daniel? After Daniel? Thanks. Where if you some time on your own, this is one of those free tidbits, so it costs you no extra. If you look at the very first verse of Isaiah and the very first verse of Hosea, they were talking to the same, it's the same period of time. It says the vision of Isaiah that came during the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah. Hosea 4, or chapter 1, verse 1, same four guys. So these guys are contemporary, Hosea and Isaiah. Like I said, it don't cost you no extra. Hosea chapter 4, look at verse 1. It says, hear the word of the Lord, you children of who?
Israel.
Okay. Well, the Lord's got a bone to pick with you. The Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of computers in the land. Oh, sorry. Knowledge of God in the land. You know, they might have had knowledge of a lot of stuff. But again, if you remove knowledge of God, there's a vacuum produced that just cannot be filled. The only thing that will fill that vacuum is a knowledge of God. And if that ain't there, whatever. Now we'll skip down to verse 6. Still talking to the children of Israel. Says, my people are destroyed for lack of what?
Knowledge.
And what would that knowledge be regarding?
Computer.
Knowledge. All right, paying attention here. You know, knowledge of God, just in the context. And that's like those guys. And again, it's kind of, it's just interesting, Isaiah and Hosea being contemporaries. God told Isaiah to write, you guys are dumber than dumb animals. And Hosea, God told him to write, you're destroyed for lack of knowledge. And then we read in Isaiah, what was it, 8:15, they'll stumble and fall and be broken and snared and take all those bad things are happening. He told Hosea to write, you're going to be destroyed for lack of knowledge. You know, so it almost gives you the idea that having a knowledge of God could possibly be beneficial. Almost starting to look that way. Verse, we'll keep on reading. Michael was sort of like, because you have rejected knowledge. Can you reject something if it's not available, if somebody's not offering it to you? Now, you know, nobody in this room right now, as far as I know, could reject a free Maserati. I mean, I don't know. Maybe somebody has been offered a free Maserati. I don't know. But if it's not being offered to you, you can't reject it. So if they rejected knowledge, it wasn't that it was not available to them. That's not good. And it says, because you've rejected knowledge, I'll also reject you, that you shall be no priest to me, seeing you have forgotten the law of your God, and we're going to forget your kids too. Now, that thing about you'll be no priest to me, you can keep your finger here. I don't really know if we're coming back or not. Look at Exodus chapter 19. Exodus 19. And we'll start in verse 3. Moses went up to God, and the Lord called him out of the mountain. This was in a cave. I'm only kidding. Moses went up to God, and the Lord called unto him out of the mountain, saying, Thus shalt thou say to the house of who?
Jacob.
Jacob, and tell the children of
Israel.
Okay, so it's the same group. I know they're different human beings. These guys were dead long before. But the same genetic group that we were reading about in Isaiah and Hosea. Verse 4, you're telling this stuff. You have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I carried you on eagle's wings and brought you unto myself. Now therefore, if you will obey my voice indeed, and there's an understood, if you will keep my covenant, then you shall be a peculiar treasure unto me above all people, for all the earth is mine. So that if then, it's a conditional situation. If you do this, this is going to happen. Well, then what if they did not do this? Then this is not going to happen. It's a conditional thing. You know, if you want to get a Burger King Whopper, don't go to McDonald's. You know, you got to go to Burger King. If you don't go to Burger King, you ain't getting a Whopper. You know, it's good. Same deal. Now, having read that, verse 6, and ye who?
Children
of Israel. Ye shall be unto me a kingdom of
what?
Priests. So, was he just talking to a small little section of the children of Israel? No. He said, you'll be a kingdom of priests, a holy nation. These are the words you tell the children of Israel. So, what God had offered to them, he like put it on the table. If you do this, then you're going to be a kingdom of priests. Every one of you will be a priest. You'll help people get to learn about God. You'll go to God on behalf of people, whatever a priest does. If you do the things in verse 5, holding that in mind, by the time you get to Hosea 4:6, God's telling that same group, I'm going to reject you. You'll be no priest to me. Why? Because they rejected the knowledge of God. Well, how is somebody going to bring somebody to God if that person themselves doesn't know God? So it was kind of not a good situation back in those days. With that as background, turn to 1 Samuel chapter 19, please. Start in verse 1. Let her get there. Here we go. It says, and Saul's, you know what? Hang on just for a minute. I'll just tell you what Proverbs 28:1 says. You can look it up if you want to. It says, the wicked fleeth when no man pursueth, but the righteous are bold as a lion. There you go. Everybody gets a start. The righteous are bold as a lion. Holding that in mind, now we'll look at this 1 Samuel 19. It says, and Saul spake to Jonathan his son and to all his servants that they should do what to David?
Kill him.
Good king. Verse 2, and Jonathan, Saul's son, delighted much in David. And Jonathan told David, saying, Saul, my father, is looking to kill you. Now therefore, I pray you, take heed to yourself until the morning, and abide in a secret place, and be bold as a lion. No, and hide yourself. So that's what Jonathan was recommended. If you backtrack in the book of Samuel, you'll find that at this point, both Jonathan and David had the Spirit of God. And they were not bashful about using it. They were. So, you know, here's David. We know David is the only one in the Bible that's referred to as a man after God's own heart. Well, why would he not be bold as a lion? Wouldn't that qualify as the righteous or bold as a lion? Sort of funny. Drop down to verse 10. It says, and Saul sought to smite David even to the wall with a javelin, like pinning up a butterfly. But he slipped away out of Saul's presence, and he, Saul, smote the javelin into the wall. But David was bold as a lion. No, he fled and escaped that night. And Saul sent messengers unto David's house to watch him, to slay him in the morning. And I'm going to pronounce that Michelle. I don't really know. Maybe Michael is how you're supposed to. I don't know. But in English, Michael is a guy's name. So I'm just going to pronounce it Michelle. And where are we? Michelle David's wife told him, saying, if you don't save your life tonight, tomorrow they're going to kill you. So Michelle let David down through a window, and he went and fled and escaped. Again, how come Proverbs 28:1 says the righteous are bold as a lion? Here's a man after God's own heart, and he's running away. It says he fled. He ran away and escaped. Interesting. You know, and the reason it looks to be contradictory is because, I'm not even going to say it. You know, what does Psalm 12, verse 6 says? The words of the Lord are what kind of words?
Pure.
So if it looks like there's a conflict, is it because there really is a conflict? No. No, the words of the Lord are pure words. It's not like I got to choose. Well, is either Proverbs 28:1 true, or are these verses true? They're all true. If I don't understand how they fit together, that doesn't mean they don't fit together. It just means I don't understand it. That's all. Something to look at. We'll get to it in a little bit here. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 30. Chapter 30. We'll start in verse, well, we're going to skip the first five verses. Some bad things happen. We'll just leave it at that. You can leave. Verse 6. And David was what?
Greatly distressed.
What the heck is that all about? Wasn't he a guy? I thought he was a man after God's own heart. Now it says he was greatly distressed. That doesn't happen to a guy that's after God's own heart, does it? Well, that's what it says. As somebody once said, I didn't write the book. I'm just reading what it says. He was greatly distressed. The word for, they would have been better if they had translated because. The word for next and the word because a little bit later, it's the same word in Hebrew. The word because is a little bit stronger word. And it helps you to see it a little bit clearer. There's a cause and effect. David was greatly distressed because the people were talking about stoning him. They weren't passing around, what was it, Cheech and Chong, one of them big doobies. They weren't talking about stoner or gummies. You know, they weren't talking about stoning him that way. You know, they were going to kill him. And that's why he was greatly distressed. And why were the people talking about killing him? Because Saul and all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters, but David encouraged himself, and the Lord is God. I like that too, because sometimes you're in situations where there's nobody else around to encourage you. So does that mean, oh, well, I guess I'm hung out to dry? David encouraged himself. Nobody else did, but he encouraged himself. It's great that that's available. Verse 7. And David said to Abiathar the priest, Ahimelech's son, I pray thee, bring me hither the ephod. And Abiathar brought hither the ephod to David. Verse 8, and David inquired at the Lord, saying, shall I pursue after this troop? Shall I overtake him? And he, the Lord, answered him, pursue, for you shall surely catch up with them, and without fail recover all. So God, it's almost like God spoke to David with a strong hand here. Not, oh yeah, you'll catch up to them. You shall surely overtake them, and without fail recover all. He really put some emphasis to it. So David was greatly distressed, but he encouraged himself in the Lord, and then he went to God to ask, well, what should I do? And God gave him some info. Look at chapter 30 of 1st. That's where we are right now. Okay, look at Genesis chapter 32. Genesis 32. We're going to start in verse 6. This happens after, you know, Jacob and Esau, they had a thing back in the day where Esau was very upset with David because, Jacob, because Jacob, according to Esau, you stole my birthright and now you've stolen my blessing. So then it got to the point where Esau was telling himself, I'll wait till the old man dies and then I'm going to kill Jacob. That's what happened. And then 20, you know, Jacob escaped, 20 years go by. Now Jacob's coming back to, because, well, let's pick it up. But he's coming back. And so then, with that sort of small little background, verse that he's sending messengers to Esau saying, hey, brother, I'm coming home, whatever. Verse 6, and the messengers returned to Jacob saying, we came to your brother Esau, and also he's coming to meet you. He's so happy to see you. Oh, and 400 men with him. And we're going to find out in a few verses. I mean, you can sort of figure it out even without reading. Why would he have 400 men to come meet his brother? Is he going to throw him a really, really big party? Verse 7. Then Jacob was what?
Greatly afraid.
And yeah, and it's the same. He wasn't just afraid. He was greatly afraid. You know, he had to throw his shorts in the garbage can. He was really, it just scared the willies out of him. And distressed. And yet, here's a guy who loved God. He was a righteous person. Why wasn't he bold as a lion? Greatly afraid and distressed, he divided the people that were with him and the flocks and the herds and the camels into two bands and said, Esau, come to the one company and what?
Smite
it. That's why he brought the 400 men with him. If he does this in spite, then the other company which is left shall escape. And Jacob said, O God of my father Abraham and God of my father Isaac, the Lord who said unto me, return to your country and to your kindred. So when Jacob is going back home, is that because Jacob just decided on his own that that's something he wanted to do? No. God told him. So what it says in verse 9, the Lord which said unto me, return unto your country. He's doing what God told him to do. And in doing what God told him to do, this situation came up that we read about with Esau's coming with 400 men. Jacob's doing what God told him to do. And here's the situation. While he's in the process of doing what God told him to do, this situation came up, which made Jacob, he was greatly afraid and distressed. But I thought, okay, we'll just leave it. You told me to do this, and that you'd deal well with me. Verse 10, I'm not worthy of the least of all the mercies and of all the truth which you showed unto your servant. For with my staff I passed over this Jordan, and now I'm become two bands. What it said, it was with my staff I passed over this Jordan. What do you say, like, I passed over this Jordan with nothing but the shirt on my back. That's what it was. And now I'm coming back, and it was taking a whole moving company to get on, bring all my stuff back. Verse 11. Deliver me, I pray you, from the hand of my brother, from the hand of Esau, for I fear him, lest he will come and smite me and the mother with the children. So that's what he was afraid of. He's got 400 men. He's not just looking to kill me. He's looking to just massacre all of us. Get rid of our whole bloodline here. Verse 12, and you said, I will surely do you good, and make your seed as the sand of the sea, which cannot be numbered for multitude. So he's reminding God of things that God had told him. And God is the one who had told him, go back here. Now here I'm doing what he told me to do. And here comes this guy with 400 men. You know, they're rangers, they're SEALs, they're whatever. What the bleep? I'm just doing what you told me to do. But it's interesting to look where he did what, he was doing what God told him, and yet he was still greatly afraid in this situation and distressed. And you can read on, and God delivered him from that situation. Look at 1 Samuel chapter 21. We're just picking up a few of these. I thought this would be good because, you know, the thing about the ox knows his owner, the ass his master's crib, that sort of thing. Where without, you know, sometimes it can happen. Not that it ever does, but it could happen. Where a person could select a few verses out of the Bible and then build their theology on those few verses. Not that that would ever happen, but it could. But to get to read other verses and to see how, oh, well, these other verses, they were authored by the same guy that authored those verses, but they don't look like they really fit together. Well, if the words of the Lord are pure words, and Psalm 12:6 says that they are, well, if they really are, then they have to fit. And maybe, probably not, but maybe I might need to change my thinking so that I correct my thinking. Either that or I could change the words in the book. That's probably not a good idea. 1 Samuel, where are we? 21?
Yes.
Okay, verse 10 we're going to start with. Chapter 21, chapter 21, verse 10. And David arose and was as bold as a lion that day. He arose and ran away that day for what? Fear of Saul. And went to Achish, king of Gath. 1 Samuel 21:10, verse 11. And the servants of Achish said unto him, to Achish, ain't this David the king of the land? Was David the king of the land? No, not yet.
Not yet.
But he was, because of the way that David was operating, they thought that he was. He was functioning as the king of the land, even though he didn't have that title. Ain't this David the king of the land? A logical conclusion. Did not they sing, verse 11, middle of the verse, did not they sing one to another of hymn and dances, saying, Saul has slain his thousands and David his 10,000s? And David cast down those imaginations and every false thing that acknowledged it. No. And David laid up these words in his heart and was what?
Sore afraid.
Sore afraid of Achish, king of Gath. So now here's the leader of the children of Israel, on the one hand trying to kill him, and now he's sore afraid. The place he goes for refuge, they're going to try to kill him. You know, he don't know whether to go blind or wind his watch. What am I supposed to do? You know, but he says he was sore afraid. I know we've never been in a situation where we're sore afraid, but, you know, just if you know somebody that might happen to, this is sort of nice to read. And again, you can continue reading and you find out David got delivered from that situation. Look at chapter 23. I guess that's the next one over. Whatever it is. Chapter 23. It's going to be one verse here. Verse 26 says, and Saul went on this side of the mountain, and David and his guys on that side of the mountain, and David was bold as a lion. No. He made haste to get away for fear of Saul. Because Saul and his men surrounded David and his men round about. And again, you keep reading, David got delivered from that situation. So for me, if I read these verses, we're going to read one where you turn to Jeremiah, what is it, 39? I think, yeah, you could turn to Jeremiah 39. But as I read these verses, I got a conflict with between my, I don't want to use the word theology, but maybe that would be the right word to use. Between my, you know, what I believe and what I'm reading here. Because I thought, you know, if I got fear, can't use that word, I'm in a bad situation. Well, you are in a bad situation, but I thought that if I'm in a bad situation and I got fear, then before God is going to be capable of delivering me, I have to stop being afraid. Or else I'm not going to get delivered. But that's not really what I'm reading with these verses. These people were, well, that'd be great, but since we're being recorded, you know, these people were in really bad situations that were, you know, giving them strong consternation. They were greatly distressed, greatly afraid, and God still delivered them. Look at Jeremiah 39. I think this little couple of verses here might kind of put it together. Jeremiah 39, and we'll start in verse 16. It says, go and speak to Abed-Melech the Ethiopian, saying, thus saith the Lord of hosts, the God of Israel, behold, I'm going to bring my words upon this city, talking about Jerusalem, for evil and not for good. And they shall be, my words shall be accomplished in that day before thee. In the words before thee meaning in your presence. You're going to see it. Verse 17, but I will deliver you in that day, saith the Lord, and you shall not be given into the hand of the men because you're not afraid. No. He said you shall not be given into the hand of the men of whom you are afraid. Well, I thought if I was afraid, I couldn't get delivered because fear is believing, believing is the law, etc., etc., etc. Verse 18, for I will surely deliver you. And you shall not fall by the sword, but your life shall be for a prey unto you, because you have done what?
Put your trust in me.
Put your trust in me, saith the Lord. So to me, that puts it together. There's these guys, you're afraid of these guys. Well, how could you? I thought you could either have fear or trust. You're afraid of these men. You're going to be delivered from these men that you're afraid of because you put your trust in me. I think a real easy example would be, here I am, mind my own business. No, here I am, out in the ocean, swimming like a rock. And when I come up, help! There's a lifeguard over there. Help! Am I afraid of drowning? Very likely. Because most likely, if somebody don't do something, I'm going to drown. So I'm afraid of the situation. But I trust that that person over there will deliver me from this situation that I'm in. I can have fear of this and at the same time have trust of that. If you turn to Psalm 34, this will be the last place we'll go, I guess. Psalm 34. And in verse 4, it says, I sought the Lord, and he heard me and delivered me because I was not afraid. No, he delivered me from all my fears. It doesn't say he delivered me because I stopped being afraid. He delivered me from all of the things that I was afraid of. That's what all my fears. It's not saying, well, because I changed my believing, then God was capable of delivering me. No. He was in all my fears. He was in situations, and we read some of them, where he was in situations that were just desperate. He was, his life was literally, it was like he had one foot in the grave and the other one on a banana peel. It very, very easily could have been that was the end of David. Or in other guys that we read about. But in that situation, Jacob was like that, Abed-Melech the Ethiopian, others. In those situations where they were afraid, they still trusted that God could deliver them from that situation that they were afraid of. And he did. And so, looking at those verses, I thought, you know, a real simple lesson to learn could be, it's not our believing that delivers us. It's our God.
Amen.